Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
It's the Mitchin Podcast.
Hey, what's up? And welcome to another episode of The Mitchin. We are a weekly food podcast coming to you out of Sydney. My name is Andrew Levins. My co-host is Mitchell Orr.
Hi, Levins.
How you been, Mitch?
Pretty good.
Mitch has spent most of the morning so far showing me pictures from the BET Awards last week.
You're so out of touch these days, bro. I have to keep you informed.
In fact, last week we said we wanted to talk about the Fargo finale as well. Yeah. Did you watch Fargo?
No.
All right.
And Prodigy passing away.
Yeah, there's lots of non-food stuff
that we didn't do any of it.
We need to have like a weird little recap at the end of each episode of like
non-food
stuff. Actually, the secret is of the Mitchin that we hate food. We have a guest today, and she is a return guest. Last time she was on, she was in limbo, coming to Australia from San Francisco, Chez Panisse, to work for Merivale at a as yet to be named when she came on, as yet to be named restaurant. In Paddington. We knew it was going to be part of the Paddington Inn kind of complex.
You and everybody else. You and every other delivery driver that sends our stuff to the wrong place.
Well, that's the other secret of the Mitchin is that I'm a delivery driver. Yeah. The restaurant has opened. It opened at the end of last year.
In October,
yep. That's technically the end. Don't try and correct
me. Sorry.
There'll
right,
be plenty
right.
of opportunities you're to correct right. me later in the episode. And the restaurant is called Fred's. And so joining us from Fred's is Danielle Alvarez.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming back.
Great. I think the last time you had me at the end, I joked about Fred's opening like, you know, maybe in the winter or something like that. And I think it opened like 8 or 9 months after that joke that I made. So really embarrassed. But anyways, it happens. Well, so here we are.
So, I mean, we'll talk about Fred's at some point. But before I want to talk about that limbo period. Mm. What's it like being brought to another country with the idea that everyone knows that plans don't always run as smoothly as they set out to. But, you know, when you were out here for over a year,
yeah, like 2.5.
2.5 years?
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay, it's right. all right when you're on the payroll for 2.5 years.
Though. Yeah. Yeah, I worked, though. It's not like I was sitting at home. But yeah, it's a weird, I guess it's definitely a weird thing. I think back on that time now and I feel like, oh, what was I doing that whole time? But, you know, I worked with a company and helped open Coogee Pavilion. I worked at the fish shop for a while. I worked at the Paddington. But it's never like, It wasn't what I was brought here to do. It wasn't my own thing. So I had to really work hard to maintain focus on what I wanted Fred's to be. So keeping in touch with a lot of the farms that we wanted to source produce from, like that's kind of where I kept my head focused and then just got on with the day-to-day of the other job that I was given. So it was weird. Limbo's weird. It's not particularly inspiring, but I always, you know, had the goal. So that was good.
Yeah, and funnily enough, when you were last on, during your limbo period, you were on with Louis Tikaram, right?
No.
No, it wasn't. You were there though in the park.
I was there, but I wasn't on the show that day. No. Last time it was with Mike Eggert. I was afraid you were going to bring him back today. Have to debate on air with him.
Mike's man. whenever he comes on, too many people tune in. So we got to get the listeners now. Yeah. But Louis Tikaram, in a different country,
yeah.
The one that you came from,
yeah.
stuck in that similar limbo period while he waited for EP and LP to open.
Except yeah. he wasn't working, but he was on the payroll. So
he had the best of yeah. both worlds, I guess. Yeah.
So Fred's is open now.
Yeah.
It's very much like a big open kitchen yeah. up there in Paddington. And, you know, the food is... Well, you can explain the food a bit
yeah,
better.
Yeah, I mean, I guess Fred's... it's not... Although it is like a very grand and beautiful, surprising room, I think it's also meant to be a bit understated, as is the food. You know, nothing that we do there is really conceptual or over the top or anything. It's all very simple, straightforward. But that's where I came from. That's what I learned, is just kind of honest cooking. And I think the idea of opening up the kitchen and sort of bringing everyone into the kitchen is to expose that honesty even more. You see everything happen right in front of you from start to finish, if you're curious. If you don't want to watch, if you don't want to look, you don't have to, which is the beautiful thing I think about Fred's that I've noticed, is people, they come in, they go, wow, this is amazing. But then they get into their conversation. It's not so much on your phone, like it seems like people are very connected and talking to each other, which is great.
Even Mitch, when you go eat there?
Yeah, Mitch is still on Twitter. I haven't seen Mitch in there a little bit. Yeah, I seem to miss him.
I've been to Fred's a few times and Daniel's been here once.
Yeah, which he likes to remind me of a lot.
Because everyone usually gives me shit from at my restaurant, so when I get the opportunity yeah. to give someone else
shit back,
I'm happy to hand it out.
So you were brought to work here, you know, with the idea that you would bring what you're, you know, known for, your cooking background to Australia during that, which is like a kind of like, I guess, is it like American, European?
Yeah. Well, I think Californian cooking is a mix of those things. And I guess
God, that's so embarrassing.
That kind of became, you really don't know anything about food, do you?
Well, I hate it. I know. As we've established that at the start of the episode.
Yeah. So I think trying to bring that sort of, I guess, California, a lot of freshness, a lot of herbs, like that kind of thing, which translates so easily here because it's a similar climate. You know, I don't quite know. I'm figuring out more what Australian food is.
It's, us too.
Yeah.
Are we? Maybe not.
I don't care.
Yeah. It doesn't really matter. But I guess it translated for me. It was a pretty simple move. I think it works well here.
But in that limbo period, did you change anything drastically that, you know, you came out here with an idea of doing something over here, and then in that time where you're actually just spending time eating and getting, you know, the city?
Yeah, I think just eating around Sydney is very inspiring. There's a lot of really good chefs here doing really good food. I think since Fred's opening, there's probably a few things that ideas or inspiration that I picked up along the way. It's not anything particular, but something I probably never would have seen in California. A lot of that is kind of the Asian influence, which isn't as strong back there when you translate it into like European style of food. But people do that here with such ease. And I think I've found that really inspiring.
Now, we always talk about the difference between, you know, food in different countries, but after last week, we spoke at length about Pete Wells, the food critic.
I was
going
to bring that up too.
What about the difference in food critics in America and Australia?
Well, I got to say, I didn't have any direct experience with them in the States because I always worked in restaurants there, but I was never head chef. So that was new to me here, is being so hyper aware of them here. Whereas out there, there's maybe a couple. In San Francisco, the writer for The Chronicle was the big one. But, you know, I worked at a place that he would just come in to eat at. He wasn't coming in to review. So I think there may be a bit more honest out there, a little bit.
Really?
Reading some of Pete's reviews have been, you know, his bad ones, I feel like have been particularly heartbreaking. And I'm not sure I've read that many from people out here.
Yeah,
but maybe I just haven't been here long enough.
The harsh review doesn't happen out
yeah.
here anymore. If a review is going to be really harsh, then it tends not to get published.
Because yeah. they get sued
yeah.
yeah, so that's, yeah. I guess that's a really
Which is surprising
dynamic.
That they don't get sued in America, the land of suing
the
everyone
land of lawsuits.
For everything.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how they can get away with it. But yeah.
We were talking about the Pete Wells episode last week, and it's obviously none of us were written about it, you know, but what's it like to actually have your restaurant
featured in?
Yeah, yeah, incredible. I mean, especially as an American, I think to have someone like him come out and recognize us and enjoy it, and put us into the category of, you know, we all do different things, you know, but even just to be mentioned along those guys is pretty special. But obviously he's a hugely regarded food critic and working for one of the greatest papers in the world, in the business. So yeah, it's a huge honor. Amazing.
Yeah, so Fred's was featured alongside Fyodor, Momofuku Seibo, Automata, and
Esther.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty pretty varied list of you know, fine diners.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
they're not really fine diners.
Well, yeah, the higher end restaurants.
Yeah.
I guess it's interesting too to see like an American or so, you know, someone who has nothing to do with dining culture in Australia come in and pick those, because I'm sure that a diner that, you know, loves a couple of those other ones doesn't maybe include the other ones in their like top five. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think people here tend to...
It's interesting that he went to three places that feature like a wood-fired oven or cooking over coal as the sort of one of the features of the restaurant kind of thing.
And how did he like choose to go to those places, I wonder? I don't know.
Yeah.
Who told him to go to those places? But, you know, like there is a lot of, you know, a lot of our listeners were, and maybe our hosts were somewhat disappointed in that article. But I think we would have been so much more disappointed if the list was like, you know, Key, Bennelong, Rockpool.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I think it is cool to feature.
Did we get feedback on that?
Yeah, I'm going to get to it in a moment.
So I didn't hear it. Do you want to fill me in? What did people say?
Yeah, I haven't heard it either.
Well,
I'm pretty sure I'm not even an admin or have access.
for good reason. I haven't made Mitch an admin of the Mitchin page because I know he would like all the Mitchin posts from the Mitchin account. Yeah. And it's just a bad look.
I love doing that.
You liked your own photo.
So we spoke about this article last week. Mm. This is after we drank the Wu-Tang liqueurs.
Oh.
Don't do that.
No.
of course, Lee Tran had something to say.
So, regular guest and host of the podcast, The Unbearable Lightness of Being Hungry, the original, and some would say best, Sydney food podcast, Lee Tran Lam, weighed in.
Whoa.
Yeah, with paragraphs upon paragraphs.
She
loves writing a freaking novel on Facebook.
But it's all pretty amazing, and I think this is a good way to continue this conversation.
Okay.
She said, I just want to pipe up in defense of Pete Wells. He didn't set out to write the definitive guide on Sydney, but the five chefs whose cooking impressed me the most. He says he could have easily written about coffee or how much he loved Cabramatta or how awesome the yum cha was, and maybe that's when he would have dropped some praise in the direction of Mr. Wong. But I wanted to look at what was new in town, is what he said, and that led me to the generation of chefs emerging in places like Fyodor. I thought his list was pretty great. He name-checked Automata and Esther for being restaurants worthy of global attention. I would totally agree. I don't think he was saying that Asia has zero influence on the young guns who are doing excellent things in Sydney. His words are, of course, a spectacular Chinese, Vietnamese or Korean restaurant may open next month. At the moment, though, Sydney's newer chefs are tilting towards North America and Europe. I think if Moon Park was still open or if he'd been there when Paper Bird started up, we need to get the Moon Park boys back on because they've got a new restaurant opening soon, which is very exciting.
It's exciting.
They might have had a good chance of being mentioned. And maybe it's just me, but it seemed like he was getting tomatoes thrown at him for not writing the perfect Sydney list. Again, that maybe didn't seem like it was his intention. Maybe I'm just being a Pete Wells nerd, but I think he wrote a pretty awesome piece about mostly unassuming chefs doing inspired things in Sydney.
That's nicely.
You unassuming? Is that a compliment?
Yeah, I love that. Unassuming. Never let him see you coming.
No one said it was a bad article.
No one
said it was a bad article. Lennox is like 40 plus years old, right? So he's not really...
What's Lennox?
From Fyodor.
Is he?
Oh, right.
Yeah, he's got to be.
We could get sued. Sorry, Lennox.
I don't know. I disagreed with a few things, but I've already forgotten because it wasn't really this thing.
It's the Mitchell podcast, everybody. Yeah. No, I think the big point was that, you know, that he did focus on didn't focus on any restaurant that had the Asian influence on it.
I remember what I have the issue. Lee Chan said these were his five favorite places. To have five favorite places, you have to go to 100 places. He probably only went to those five places.
Yeah, but no one is going to pay him enough to come and eat 100%.
But she's saying that he's talking about his five favorite chefs.
The five chefs that impressed
him
the most.
But he's talking about the five restaurants that he went to, which he was... Who knows how he was directed to go there.
Look, I think whoever had the job of choosing the restaurants for him to go to did a pretty
good
thing.
They didn't do a bad job.
Yeah.
I mean, like, obviously he comes here with, this is what I need to achieve. Yeah. This is what people are telling me I have to do and blah, blah, blah. And it's nice that he went into them and he enjoyed them and he didn't walk out thinking, oh, God, things are terrible here.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like everyone's talking about this and the food actually sucks. Yeah. But, you know, he enjoyed it. I see totally what you're saying. Like, I think that... As I said before, I think that's what's impressed me most about Australian cooking is that Asian influence. And whether or not that was happening when he came and ate here doesn't change the fact that that it's is the makeup of Australian cooking. Yeah. And he might have, you know, just but not like, seen it at that moment.
Like we said, at least that piece of writing, hopefully it brings more eyes down here, which then hit everybody as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Which is the point.
It can't be bad. I feel like.
Has it been good for you guys, that article?
You know, anytime something really good gets written, there's always, like, I've noticed a bit of, you know, higher, like, elevated expectation from everyone, which I find a little bit disappointing because I like to be unassuming. And I always want
everyone knows you like to be unassuming.
I like to be understated and I, you know, I don't want to be like, we're awesome, you know, come here. But so you get a lot more crankiness sometimes, I think, from people.
Expectations.
But what's cool is I see a lot more Americans coming in and they come up to me and they're like, hey, we're American, where are you from? And I love that. And they enjoy it. And a lot of people have eaten at Chez Panisse and they can see what we're doing and they can connect with it, which is something I think a lot of people out here maybe, you know, they don't see my background and my connection to it as to why we're doing it like this. So that's good. But there is a bit of like, yeah, it brings people in, but then it also brings a certain kind of people sometimes that you're not too excited to be serving.
I mean, are there articles that, you know, because the Mitchum was featured in the New York Times recently.
Yeah.
Venturi gave us a quote.
I saw that.
That we were one of his favorite podcasts, which I find hard to believe. I think we swear too much for him to enjoy it. I can just imagine.
Your PR company told him to say that.
No, thank you so much, Ben, if you ever listen to this. But you would think that something like that would give us a massive spike in new listeners, but it didn't at all.
No.
It's funny, like, you know, people think that these, like, you know, oh, it's so insane to be featured in this.
Yeah, but I guess, like, Americans don't really care. The general American New York Times reader doesn't really give a shit about food in Australia, especially it's such a niche thing. Like,
yeah, I just listen
to two idiots swear for an hour.
I don't know, if I was American, I'd be pretty keen to hear Australians swear. Like, when you eventually move back, you'll miss that, I reckon.
Yeah, totally.
That's why you'll keep listening to the Mitchum to all your friends.
Of course I will.
Lee Chan also went on to kind of speak about the other article we spoke about in which Pete Wells kind of...
Why doesn't Lee Tran just have her own podcast?
She does, but she doesn't handle these potentially controversial things.
She doesn't tackle these issues on the show.
She's a very polite host. She would never, ever get into an argument with a guest. We love that.
Yes.
We'll probably have her on again to argue with her. So I don't know. I mean,
let's save her. Let's save her and have her on and then let's have an argument with her.
I love it. That's a great
idea. Oh, well, come on. What is it?
This is suspense.
This is about the Pete Wells' thoughts towards the Noma Mexico pop-up.
Right. I read that one. Yeah.
Did you go to that?
No, I didn't go. I wish I would have.
One of the few Sydney chefs that didn't leave the country to go there.
Yeah. I felt like Lone Ranger back here.
I was recently at a podcast conference, which happens apparently. There are several of them. It was called Audiocraft, and Lee Tran and I were on a conversational podcast panel. And in it, I admitted that whenever we have a chef on that I'm not too familiar with, the entirety of my research is just going back and finding the episode of The Unbearable Lightness of Being Hungry and listening to her interview with him and then bringing up points that I heard.
Thorough research, Levins. Thorough.
Well, it is, because Lee Tran actually does do a lot of research.
Yeah, she's incredible. She really researched. This week's articles, and what we do on the Mitchum now is to kind of talk about relevant articles to the food and hospitality industry. And normally it's, you know,
a couple of us...
try. Thanks so much. Yeah. We don't really try. We see something that someone smarter than us shared on Facebook and then send it to each
and
other.
And then neither of us actually read it.
There's a headline I read. Yeah. I didn't read it though.
But this week's articles have been sourced by none other than Mitchell Orr. You did very good last week, mate.
Yeah.
Sent out quite a few. Although I want to point out that in the midst of all these great articles, you also sent me twice a video, which I couldn't even watch, which was, I thought you were hacked or something. Waitress caught shoving hot dog inside her before serving it to customer.
It's pretty amazing. It's unbelievable.
But you said it's a video.
Because I put my phone in my pocket and I pulled it back out and it was still like on the send thing. So I didn't think I'd press send. So I resent it.
I thought it was like one of those weird phishing scams where like in order to watch it, you have to re-put your password
and
in.
And I have to give credit. It was actually Lil, my sous chef, that sent me that.
What, she put it in her butt?
No.
Wow, wow.
Oh, God.
It would be pretty hard to put a hot dog in your butt.
I thought like just in a crack or something.
No.
No, wow.
No, like inside her.
Wow. Ooh.
Well, I'll be sending that twice to all my friends.
It's really amazing because she looks, there's someone else comes into the kitchen and she sort of waits and then looks around and then does like the double take and then proceeds to contaminate the hot dog and it puts it on a bun.
That's what I call sex too, Mitch.
I was trying to keep it classy. And then the person comes back and then she very nonchalantly sauces the hot dog.
No.
Oh, wow.
I wonder who and she was like, serving it to.
It's pretty amazing.
Wow.
And this comes hot off the heels of me complaining that you can't get a good hot dog in Sydney.
Maybe you don't want a hot dog.
Three years since I closed my diner, The Dip, like this week, I think, almost. There could not be more burger places in Sydney that do like pretty much exactly the same burger. Five years ago, it was impossible to get a classic American cheeseburger. The only place that was doing it properly was Hongi at Lotus.
Mm.
And Terry Durack and other like, you know, old school critics hated it.
Yeah.
Couldn't understand why anyone wanted this soft, very, you know,
juicy, fatty,
you know, somewhat celebratory, artificial tasting burger because of the ketchup and the mustard. But now it's like, you know, famously they did a burger war that Miffy Rigby organized, thinking that it would go to Dan and pitted Dan, Neil Perry and Hongi's Burgers and a few other hilarious burgers. I think Fassi did one.
Arisol.
And Hongi famously got the least votes.
Yeah.
And Rockpool Burger, which I don't think is like, you know, I understand that it has its place. That Rockpool Burger is not a burger for me. And so it's just very amusing that now Neil Perry's like, you know, the biggest thing that he's, you know, known for in Australia at the moment is Burger Project, which is so much more in line with what Hongi was trying to do than what Roppa was trying to do 5 years ago.
Mm. Yeah, it's surprising. Well, and they're about to have another little rivalry across the alleyway.
Really?
Well,
yeah, with the new
of course. Restaurant. Shit. Chinese Wars.
Chinese Wars on Bridge Lane.
But yeah, like I was saying, there are so many places to get cheeseburgers from now. Like it feels like a new, you know, good food's most read story every single week is a new burger place opening in a place that already has 10 burger places opening. But you can't get a fucking hot dog anywhere.
Yeah.
Have you got love for hot dogs?
I love hot dogs. Yeah. I guess I don't even bother trying to find it. Like I don't crave it because I know I can't get it. Which
I don't
ever
think about a hot dog in Sydney.
Yeah.
I go to New York and eat a hot dog. But
yeah.
Yeah.
There's a place, Guilty, the burger joint there run by the Jimmy's Burgers guy. And I only ever go there to eat his burgers, which are very good. Mm. But he has hot dogs on the menu there, which are apparently really good. And
you go there to eat a burger, but you haven't eaten a hot dog. So you're perpetuating.
I know. I need to go get this dog. Well, he's, you know, he's Jimmy's Burgers. He's not Jimmy's hot dogs. But apparently it's the guy who makes... the Frankfurts is another American living in Australia, Eli Challenger, who does Challenger Small Goods from Bondi. I bought a bunch of his like ham and bacon for Christmas last year. It's good stuff. So I have to go check that out. Anyway, keep you updated, Mitch and listeners.
Hot dogs.
Speaking of hot dogs, burgers, dude food, the most important story that Mitch found this week.
Very important.
Involves one of the most influential chefs in the world, Guy Fieri.
What way?
On the other side of the world over here, you know, all we really have to you know, base our knowledge of Guy Fieri off is the odd glimpse at one of his shows, be it, what is it called, like Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives.
I do know it.
That's a fun show.
It's like my dad's favorite show.
That's a fun show, though. And that's just like him, like, taking Highway, what's the famous highway? 60?
Route 66.
Route 66, yeah. And driving around and eating at, you know, all the
dive-y places.
Yeah, the closest Guy Fieri experience I've ever had was in Dallas Airport. There's a big Guy Fieri freaking diner that's like super over the top. And
one of his places.
And, yeah, right. And me and Louis just sort of, me and Hongi, sorry, looked at it and just like, oh, I don't know. And then, like, had his, like, 10 TVs with his show playing and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, I'm not familiar with anything food-wise, Guy Fieri. I only know the hat. I mean, the blonde hair and the sunglasses on the back.
What's Danny, as an American chef, what's your experience with Guy Fieri?
None. I mean, it's not like I've ever been to any of his restaurants.
But do know about donkey sauce,
I know about
right?
donkey sauce.
What's donkey sauce?
I don't... I know about it, but I don't... Is it like a mayonnaise sauce with chili and all kinds
of
stuff?
Right, okay. So, the news has come out in an Esquire article, and Guy Fieri has admitted...
Hello, everyone. Just sit down for this.
The donkey sauce is literally... just aioli.
What?
It's a scandal. It's rocked the food world this morning.
It's just, he admitted that it's basically just aioli, but that doesn't make it sexy.
What? I feel like my mind is exploding.
Why would
right
something
now?
Called donkey sauce be considered know. Sexy?
So apparently,
yeah, how's
it,
that better?
It became known as donkey sauce because once upon a time, Fieri said that you have to put sauce on a burger, otherwise, you're a jackass. And then another chef with a quotation marks thick accent asked what a jackass was. And it was explained that it's a donkey. So it became known as donkey sauce.
Okay.
That's a good story. I like that.
Yeah. That's a good
origin story.
Yeah.
I'd watch a movie based around that.
So donkey sauce is the new and improved sexier aioli.
So has he just never given a recipe for this?
No, he's just like never admitted what it was or anything.
He just serves it and sells it.
Just serves it and calls it donkey sauce.
Plus it's a garlicky mayo with chili in it.
I don't even know if it has chili in it.
Yeah, maybe it's just garlic mayonnaise.
Well,
I guess none of us would know because none of us have eaten it. Why didn't you go there in Dallas and report back?
Yeah. One of the best ever scathing reviews. Was it Pete Wells?
That review, no, it wasn't. It was somebody else, but
it was in the New York Times,
laugh
right?
out loud funny.
Of a Fieri place.
You feel bad, yeah. But...
Cause you don't really.
I kind of do for the really. People that work there. Like, because for him, no. But for everyone else that does, maybe
general,
people...
The general clientele that... go there wouldn't give a fuck and they probably never even read that.
No, the people, it's in Times Square. Like the people that go there are all tourists from somewhere else. It's definitely not New Yorkers dining at Guy Fieri's restaurant. But, you know, I guess, my heart goes out to the people that actually care and love what they do and work there, if there are any. But the reviews of the food and the decor and the style of service are just hilarious.
It's so scathing.
I don't think funny. I
yeah. Oh, man, you got to... I'll put up on the Mission Facebook page, which you can find at facebook.com/themission. It's one of the... I mean, if anyone deserves it, it's Guy Fieri.
It'll go down in infamy, I think.
Is that place
review.
Still open?
I don't even know.
Angus, the co-host of my other podcast, Hey Fam, he's eaten at Guy Fieri's restaurant. Yes, he fucking has.
I think Angus exclusively eats.
He's obsessed with this... reality show that you can watch on SBS On Demand on that app, which is a very good TV app. You can watch the latest Fargo, and there's a really good show called Nirvana, the Band, the Show that I just got into that's really, really good. Mm-hmm. It's like, it reminds me of like Flight of the Conchords. It's very good.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. But he's obsessed with the show that you can watch in there called Mystery Diners.
Okay.
And it is like a guy, it's like a vigilante almost, like a guy goes undercover to expose... like, so basically he'll talk with the management of restaurants that actually exist, and they'll send someone in undercover to see if their staff are honest or scamming them. And it's always like this ridiculously heightened drama.
It's like a reverse undercover boss kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. and the host is so dry and ridiculous. Yeah, so another good. We occasionally give updates on food television you should watch. You probably shouldn't watch that unless you like terrible reality TV.
Hungy probably watches that.
So, Danielle, actually, did you go as well? Were both of you guys at Dark Mofo or just Danielle?
No.
I went. I cooked there. It was it's an incredible event.
So it's a massive...
It looked pretty amazing.
Is it two weekends?
Yeah. Now, this year was the first year they did two weekends.
Down in Hobart?
It used to be one only, but I think it's just gotten so big that they've opened it up over the two weekends.
It used to be just at MoMA, and now it's like the entirety of Hobart.
Mona.
That's right.
Yep.
Ready to be good. Thank you.
Yeah. Now there's stuff going on all over the city, and the whole city gets into it. Like, they light up. So obviously it's all about celebrating the dead of winter, and everything's very winter dark and stuff, yeah. Right? Yeah. And they light up the whole city with red lights, and there is that kind of undercurrent theme of darkness, and they get in all these crazy like death metal bands to play shows, and
even
a
like
lot of the art is really
like
dark.
Dark European house on like the techno side as well.
Yeah.
So what were you down there doing?
I was part of the winter feast. So I was cooking with the guys in the Mona kitchen, in the heavy metal kitchen, which is amazing. They have all this really cool stuff that they designed and built to cook.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
To cook over fire with fire, like a huge smoker, the wall of fire, which I was using for cooking whole hogget, beautiful grills. And so they were there for the both weekends. I was there on the second one. I think Dave Verhal from Embla worked with them the first weekend. And I went over a few weeks earlier and met this woman who raises these beautiful lambs and hoggets and mutton, and decided to buy some from her. And we cooked those whole on the wall of fire. Served it with chimichurri, and that's it.
Nice. Awesome.
Sold heaps. There's so many people that go there. My God, thousands.
Heaps of people travel too.
Yeah.
Like lots of Sydney siders are down there.
Well, there was a cruise ship that went full.
Yeah, that's right.
From Sydney.
Yeah,
they organized it. So
one
it was
of my
a Mona
staff did that actually.
Trip. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it docks right at the pier right there. Yeah. You get off and, you know, you're there for 2 days. It's awesome.
I think there's like a lawlessness of the event that appeals to, Sydney clubbers.
Yeah, for sure.
That can't go out for past 1:30 in Sydney anymore.
Yeah.
Because people were like just out all fucking night drinking in the street.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. Like,
that's the best.
Yeah.
The way it should be.
The way it should be.
So one thing that was not allowed to happen at Dark Mofo this year, or certainly not in the to the extent that it was originally intended to, is an artwork, a kind of performance piece by an artist called Herman Nitsch.
Herman Nitsch.
Thank you. You should play a drinking game one day. Next time you listen to the mention, every time I get corrected, do a shot. I guarantee someone will die.
I want a little like bell and a little number just pops up in the corner of the screen every time it happens. Ding.
But his performance piece was a kind of comment on where we get our food from and knowing the, you know, was it a celebration of butchering, right?
I don't know.
Yep. No, I like...
Ding.
I don't think it was meant to be a celebration.
It was meant to be confrontational.
Yeah, it's meant to be confrontational. I think, actually, for me, it was super interesting that was going on, you know, just down the road. And there were hundreds, I don't know about thousands, but hundreds of people protesting outside. Because I guess for those of you who don't know, he basically, this performance piece is him kind of holding a bull sort of like on a crucifix, and people carry it around in this ceremony, displaying it, and the people that are carrying it are, you know, covered in blood, and they use gallons of it, and it's all very meant to be confrontational and very gruesome, and they don't kill the animal in front of you, but it's just kind of displaying it after it's been killed.
And they pull all of its guts out.
And, yeah. And it's, you know, I suppose, yes, the undercurrent is this is the food that you're eating. Why can't you look at it, you know, in this state and just accept that this is how it is? But just down the road, I'm cooking 6 whole hogget, like hanging by a cross in front of a fire, and no one says anything about that. Like, I even had someone come up to me and they were like, oh, can you take a good up close photo of these lambs, because I'm going to send them to my friend who is protesting outside of the performance. I was like, yeah, awesome, bring it on.
So there was an article that Mitch sent me that he stole from David Moyle's wall that he posted, and this article is on a blog of a farmer. Oh, it's on the mobile version, doesn't display his name. I'll figure it out, but it's this incredible story of, you know, that this guy raises cattle, and there was a runt of the litter, and his mother died, basically, and the calf wasn't able to feed. And so he organized for someone to purchase the calf, and then he takes the calf home, and the calf wakes up with mucus pouring out of its nose the next morning, and he realizes that it's sick. And the entire time that this calf that he has found a buyer for is dying, you know, he says this is a Hobart, a Tasmanian resident as well. He's just thinking about this performance piece that isn't allowed to happen, and how, you know, people are just so unaware of what goes into raising cattle.
Or any animal,
you know, that people viewing things as just food and not knowing where it comes from.
Yeah, it's a huge issue, I think.
It's a huge disconnect.
It's... You get things in little plastic containers at grocery stores, and I left, we did chicken recently, and like a lot of people, I left the feet on because they were beautiful, and you know, we got them in like that, and the amount of people that like just couldn't, they were like, can you please take this back and take the feet off, because I can't even look at this. And you know, obviously in Asian cultures where that's like very common, that's even not European an issue culture, but but there seems to be something going on with people where they just have no sense of how difficult it is. You know, again, price of food comes into that. Raising animals, how they're slaughtered, how they get from there to your plate there's a lot of work and a lot of effort and a lot of love too that goes into that from a lot of people.
What I found really interesting about the article, which you can find on valleyfield.com.au, it's been written by a farmer called Glenn Huon. He also has a lot of different... I'm sure you can give me a ding for that. I'm sure I mispronounced his name.
I wouldn't know.
But it's a great website, like stacks of, you know, personal information, but also like, you know, recipes and all that kind of thing. But within it, he admits to not even eating meat that often, which I found fascinating.
I kind of feel like if you saw things happen from start to finish a bit more, and you were involved in the process somehow, you probably wouldn't eat meat as much.
And there's like, it displays in this post, which is an incredible and moving read, like so much empathy towards this calf that his it's now not part of the process of, it's he's off the farm now. He has this, like, he's gone from potential meal to pet.
Yeah.
And no, but even on the farm, it was the same. It was his issue was more of how everybody else would see that. Like for him, it sort of stays the same. His love and care stays the same from the farm to the suburbs, but he was scared about having the calf, which was now dead, in the suburbs, rather than it being a dead calf on a farm. It's now a dead calf on the front porch of, you know, downtown Hobart, so to speak. Right. You know what I mean? And how people would react to that. Whereas if it was on the farm where they don't see or don't know, it's not an issue, you know what I mean?
It's just part of it.
Yeah. Like there's an amazing part where he's like, maybe I could just put the calf in the bin. But he's like, well, if the carbos come along and then a calf falls out of the bin, what it, like, you know, or if someone sees me dumping this rolled up thing into the bin, you know, like, yeah. So it's like, well, then does he take it back and cremate it at the farm or et cetera, et cetera? It's a really cool
interesting dilemma, yeah. I guess. Probably not, and one.
It, yeah, it just goes to that disconnect of,
yeah,
you know, what's happening.
As soon as you take it from the farm,
yeah,
what is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It made me realize, I mean, Mike Eggert used to always push on about we should do an episode with farmers, particularly livestock farmers, and because I think that would be like a pretty interesting and eye-opening conversation.
Yeah, I agree. I think that would be a good one. If you can find ones that want to talk, a lot of them are a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. Also, it might mean us having to go rural.
Yeah.
You okay with going rural?
That's great. Imagine the sound of like sheep in the background.
Just those chirping birds that only appear like 50 kilometers outside of Sydney.
As long as there's 4G, bro, then we'll be all right.
What was it like dealing, what's it like dealing directly with a farmer?
Oh, it's the best. I don't really want to do it any other way. I think I think in the restaurant we can get so stuck into our like day to day and how hard things can be and, you know, our prep and all that. But I think the moment you speak to someone who's so far removed from that, but yet still so involved in your menu and your process, it's really, it inspires me. It reinvigorates me. Like anytime I'm feeling a bit kind of run down, I call one of those guys and I'm like, okay, what's coming? What have we got? What's in the ground? And they're so excited about what they do, and that kind of brings life back to me, which I hope I can transfer to my kitchen.
I always think about how few of Sydney's restaurant suppliers are able to actually afford the meals that that some of their produce goes on to create.
Yeah, probably not many. I mean, I think a lot of the I'm all for totally fair pricing, so I don't really like haggle with them. My bosses shouldn't be listening to this, but you know, I trust them to.
They listen to the past.
to do right by us and charge fairly and charge enough to have the life that they want to have. And if we can pay for that and price it as such on our menu where people still want to come in and eat it, then I feel like that's a win-win for everyone. For a lot of them, if I knew that they couldn't, I would invite them in and just, you know, treat them to a meal, because they should be having the food that we're serving that they're providing us with. They should see it all happening.
One thing I remember really clearly is, we've spoken about him on the podcast before, but Vinny from Verde Verdura, whenever he had pine mushrooms, he would take them to you, Mitch, because you were cooking him a pine mushroom pasta.
And packing them up and saying, oh,
yeah. That was the same. So, like, so good.
Yeah, it's always interesting to see how excited they get. Like Norm, who we get potatoes from, who has a stall down at Carriage Works on Saturdays. Whenever I go and get potatoes from him, he's like, what are you doing? And I say, what varieties have you got, Norm? What's going on? You know, he's like, oh, we've got this. He's like, what are you doing with it? And I'm like, well, I want to do a potato salad. Like, we used to do potato salad days with the burrata. So it's like potato sliced in, pressed, cooked with duck fat, echalot, thyme, and then you sort of cut it and grill it so you see all the layers. And he was like, oh, that's mate. Like, you know, they just see,
yeah,
and then that, you know, they might eat fucking boiled potatoes every night. I don't know, but then to see the creative process of something as simple as a potato really inspires joy on
them.
Their face,
yeah.
And then, you know, you go and take them some or show them just a photo or something. Like, oh, fuck, amazing! You know,
it's really good. I think like sort of conversion of energy from them to you and you back to them. Mm. It kept the inspiration and kind of the love for what each of you do can go both ways. I think it's, I don't know, I would love to see more of that from more of us.
Let's get to the email, shall we?
Sure.
We're getting stacks of emails now, Danielle. We're getting like in between each episode, like 5.
Oh.
A lot of them are like requesting things that we said we would put up, like episodes. A lot of people want your Mexico list.
There's like 4 things that Lev said he'll put up this week that we're definitely not going to.
Yeah. Sorry, you remember all of this?
I remember.
The Guy Fieri one review. Guy Fieri, I remember one, that one.
And then the Glenn Horn
article. Yeah.
People asking for your Mexico trip details.
Just listen to the fucking podcast. It's all there.
You said email me and I'll send
you. Well, no
one
emails me. I don't get these emails, bro.
He doesn't have admin privileges.
Yeah, that's right.
You don't forward them to me. I don't see them.
My favorite email that I got this week was you got invited, just you, to a free meal at the Botany View Hotel. It's the new guys that have
from a PR company.
Yeah, they've done the same chef that's done Lady Hampshire and Lord Gladstone meals. But yeah, it's just, hey, Mitch. and I get, you do get a guest though. So I think the expectation is that, what if I give you admin privileges?
Is it already gone though? Have we already missed it?
No, but when is it? It's whenever you like, I think. Bookings are essential. Just reply to this email, confirm your interest. You going to do it?
I don't know.
That's very nice.
I have to gauge my interest.
All right. So I've got a very good one here from the Alex, who runs a pizza restaurant in Alexandria. He says, I have an issue I feel is worth a mention. I think you may have touched on this before. I feel like there is a big disconnect between guests and the restaurants when it comes to rectifying problems with a dining experience. The usual things. I don't like this. It's not what I thought it would be, etc. It seems like some guests have no idea when any self-respecting restaurant is happy to fix a problem when they can. Or maybe some people seem content to have their night ruined so they can rant about it on Facebook later on. If it is indeed the former, how can we educate people and create the mindset that a restaurant owner and its staff are there to serve, not just take your money in exchange for food?
It's tough, man, because it happens all the time, right? Someone comes in and you say, you know, it seems like they're having a really good time and your wait staff are engaging with them and how is everything, etc., etc. And then everything's fine, they tip and then they leave and then there's a big rant on your Facebook page wall or on Yelp or whatever the fuck. And it is that thing of, do people just want to get the attention online and get the likes or the interaction or whatever? Or, you know, do they go away and they're a little bit pissed? Or, you know, what happens in the meantime and why don't they say something? And then there's the other end of the scale where people walk in from the before they even, then they're just set on having a shit time.
Yeah.
No matter what you do.
Mm.
And it's got nothing to do with the restaurant. It's got nothing to do with what you're serving. It's got nothing to do with the service.
Mm.
It's just they're in that frame of mind that they're going to be difficult. And you can't win. You can't please everyone all the time.
Yeah, you're not going to please them. I think there is a bit of just accepting that that's always going to happen. As far as educating people.
Mitch just drank down the wrong hole.
As far as educating guests, I mean, I don't know how much else we can do aside from, you know, cooking on display and trying to make sure that they have a good time. Like, if they are going to come in and just know that they're going to have a bad time, well, nothing you're going to do is going to fix that.
And but if someone hasn't eaten something and your wait staff says, is everything okay, is there something wrong with the dish or la la la, and they say no, it's all fine,
you've done your part.
What can you do? You know, and sometimes they are just full, and that's fine. Sometimes they didn't like it, and you know what? That's fine too. Not everyone has to like everything. If we fuck something up and did something wrong, then we'll go out of our way to fix it.
Yeah.
But if you didn't like something, and that's your personal taste, then that's okay.
Yeah.
You don't have to like everything, but we don't have to cater to every single whim that you have either.
No.
So you cannot like something. But if we executed what we were trying to execute, then that's cool. And
you
then
have
you know
to
what?
Know
Probably
what
you'll still get free dessert anyway.
Yeah. You have to know what you stand for, I think, as cooks and chefs and restaurateurs and everything. You have to know what your best is. And sometimes we do get it wrong. Like, absolutely, mistakes happen. And that's always going to be the case. None of us are perfect. But we'll always try and go above and beyond to make your experience amazing. And if it does come back that we've missed something, that you have a serious complaint about something, because, some people want to make their voices heard. They, you know, maybe they do just want another free meal or something like that.
Yeah.
But you still have to address it. And one of my bosses always says, every complaint is an opportunity to make a friend, which is a little bit cheesy, but we do obviously we do take it quite seriously. We want to get all the details and understand what went wrong. We offer them something if we feel like it's valid to come in again and let us win you over. But in the case of someone who just wants to be difficult and cranky, you got to just let it go.
Yeah, sometimes you can just lull on the Instagram post and let it escalate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you are a diner and you have a problem, I mean, I think it should be known that you should address that problem instead of just keeping quiet, because
not in a cunty way.
Almost
just,
all, you
know, or just ranting publicly. Like, I think that's worse. Like, address it or don't say anything.
Very few restaurants will ignore you.
No.
Yeah.
But people that care about what they do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this actually ties into our next email. Kind of tight. Thanks to Alex for the last one. This actually could be advice we can give to Jez, who writes and says, "Hey, Levens and Orr, you guys and everyone else who knows what's going on, Hong et al. Recommend Automata." So we dutifully went table for two. Great table, lovely stuff. I agree, Jez. The natural wine pairing is an OMFG moment. So I, at this point in the email, I was like, oh, good. He loved it. It smells like a urinal. From Italy, isn't that a long way for a fresh natural wine to come from? Please correct me if that's wrong. But drinking it with the dish it's paired with, it's still close to passione mixed with cold tea. My question is,
delicious.
How do I convey that this is utter shit? It's a moment most of us who don't go out, save for a special occasion, don't know how to deal with. So I'm asking if there's a way to ask about getting a black without getting a black mark on our table. Love your work. Oh, sorry. Don't call him Jez, everybody. His nickname is J-Rock.
Well, yeah.
So what is he? Sorry.
That sounds delicious to me. But if they ordered a matching, obviously ordered the matching wines, right? So that's a set thing of wines that the sommelier would have chosen to go with the food. And that's based on the sommelier's palate.
And sommelier, Tim is a good friend of ours and I think a very great somm as well.
Mm. Yeah. So that doesn't mean that you're going to like every wine that's poured for you in a tasting. And you know what? At somewhere like Automata, all you have to do is say, I don't particularly like this wine.
Yeah.
It's not to my palate, or, you know, it tastes, it's too funky for me. It's too barnyard, whatever.
Which is fine. Yeah.
If you let them know, Tim will probably say, oh, are you sure? You know, but I guarantee you he's going to go and pour you something that's more to your palate. Mm.
They've got a stack of boring wines in a cupboard somewhere. No, but without throwing J-Rock under the bus, but like, you know, the natural wine is...
If you don't communicate
exactly,
they're not, like, we're not mind readers.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to communicate the experience that you want to have as well.
Yeah.
And they will go above, like, they will go above and beyond to meet that. And if you say, oh, I really, really don't like this wine... Okay, cool, no worries. What do you like? Mm. And let me pour you something else.
I think natural wine too is one of those things for a lot of people where it's so different to, you know, conventional wine that I think for people that don't have experience with that, it can be like, whoa.
Pretty confronting.
What is this? You know? Yeah, it can be like that. But as you said, any respectable restaurant that believes in good hospitality will seek to give you something that you do like, you know. But in a restaurant like that where the menu is set and the wine pairing is matched, it's considered thoughtful people that have, you know, thought about these pairings and have decided on this
based on the ethos of the restaurant, and the style of food and the style of wine they serve, etc.
Yeah, and you should have an understanding of that, I think, when you go into restaurants like that, you know, it's not a la carte. You're not choosing all these things. And whereas maybe you don't have to do the wine pairing, it still should fall in line with that experience as a whole.
Yeah.
But, you know, you still might not like it.
And before you do a wine pairing, ask questions about it. If you know that this restaurant is renowned for natural wines, but you're not familiar with them to the point that you think a wine from Italy is not fresh. then you know, get Tim to tell you what the wine is going to taste like, and he'll say, well, the first wine tastes like passione with cold tea, and half your table might be like, that sounds interesting, and you might be like, that sounds fucked.
Yeah, you might be like, fuck that. Can I just have a Sauv Blanc?
Yeah, because those wines aren't for everybody.
Yeah.
But it is, you know, it is part of what makes Automata special is the knowledge that they have for those types of wines pairing with Clayton's food.
But just like some foods aren't for everyone, you know?
Yeah,
like
100%.
Like I know this might be controversial, but like at Noma Australia, there were some things for me that were kind of hard to eat. Mm. Just not enjoyable in that way, but I could still really appreciate and understand what those guys are doing and what they're trying to show us. And I know going into a dining experience like that, that I'm probably going to get a little bit of that.
Yeah. And you just asked for the donkey sauce.
Yeah. That just made it palatable.
Just communicate.
Yeah.
Like, don't be a jackass about it, but just communicate, you know, like, and the more you communicate with your server or the sommelier, or if a chef's serving you or whoever it may be, the better your experience is going to be, because we all want you to have a great time and we all want you to want to come back.
Yeah.
So we're going to do our best to make you have the best night possible. You know what I mean? So if you're open to that, then everyone's going to have a really fucking good time.
Mm.
And the whole restaurant's going to have an amazing energy. If you're not open to that,
communicate.
It's not going to happen.
Awesome. Mm. Well, that is the end of the Mitchin. And before we do all the sign-offs, Danielle, I want you to think of a song that you want to end this episode on. Any song that you're enjoying at the moment, and we'll just make that the last minute of this episode. And while Danielle talks about that, Mitch, you did a pop-up. Not a pop-up, like a kind of a one-off night last Tuesday at Acme.
Oh, yeah, I did.
Which you paid homage to, like, red sauce Italian.
Red sauce American Italian.
Which is one of my favorite cuisines.
Yeah,
one that you thought you hated, and then you started cooking it and you were like, oh, wait, I love this.
I love it and I hate it. I hate it because it's the baseline of everyone just thinking they can do Italian food and doing it bad.
Mm-hmm.
But it was actually a lot of fun to do. So we'll probably do another one sometime in the near future. But also, I just need to mention that Adam Wolfers and Mark Demo take over Bar Brosé tonight for the next 2 months.
Ooh.
Doing Wolfie's food from Wolfie's heritage.
And these are chefs from Room 40?
Room 40.
No, wait, what the fuck was it used to be called? Ding.
Ding. Yellow.
Yellow.
What?
Wait.
Room 4? What the fuck is Room 40?
Room 10. Are you talking about Room 10?
Wolfie just did a pop-up. Wolfie just served him, had his matzo ball soup available at
the worst thing is I don't even edit this anymore, so I can't 40? Even edit all fuck these fuck ups I constantly make. What's room 40?
Nothing.
I have no fucking
nothing.
Idea.
It does not exist.
And look it up.
Is that your apartment?
So Wolfie used to be head chef at Yellow.
Uh-huh.
And has been in the Bentley stable for quite some time and is now out on his own. And he did a pop-up, him and Mark did a pop-up at Cassoni, where they just served the same sort of Jewish, Hungarian, European influenced foods of Wolfie's childhood, mm-hmm. obviously tricked up in that, you know, into a restaurant setting. And then last week, Wolfie did a couple of soups for Room 10 during the day.
This is Room 40, fucking hell.
And then,
it's
very crazy. For the next 2 months, they're going to be at Bar Brosé. Wolfie's food's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
The matzo ball soup, like,
God, I'm
pretty
so
sure you've seen
it
and heard about it. It's really excited. Fucking good, but everything else he's doing looks amazing as well. He's got like a parsnip schnitzel kind of thing.
Wow. And awesome.
Some crazy Boma thing. I'm going to go for dinner tonight and eat the whole menu with Pussy. So
cool. Come
and check it out. And Demo will be on the floor, one of the OGs of the industry, an old industry legend. We used to work together at 121 BC.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
What was that? 40 BC.
Yeah, 40 BC. Yeah.
Room 40 BC.
So, yeah, it's going to be a fun 2 months. So, come down, check it out.
I looked up what Room 40 is. They deliver sound parcels from the Antipodes since the turn of the century. I mean, like a classical label.
Yeah, no.
I'm a goose, okay? Everyone knows I'm a fucking goose. You can find me, the goose, online at LevDog, LevDowg, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Mitch is at Instakrill and at Krillin on the run. Danielle is, I'm going to fuck it up.
On Instagram, Danielle Marie Alvarez.
Pretty easy one.
And you can find us at Room 40.
Of course, you can find The Mitchin, facebook.com/TheMitchin, and send us an email like so many good listeners do, themitchinpodcast@gmail.com. We love hearing from you. We love making fun of you.
The more emails you send, the less work we have to do. It's great.
Danielle can be found at Fred's in Paddington.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Shut up, Mitch.
She just finds out when you're coming and doesn't show up.
Yeah.
Takes an hour.
And they're Tuesday to Saturday most weeks, okay?
And what song are we going to end on?
We're going to end on Miguel Sure Thing.
That's awesome. I had to play
fave.
I had to play a party on, did I tell you about this?
The J. Cole party?
Yeah.
So, I missed it.
So I on Saturday, I got booked for a party called J. Cole versus Chance the Rapper. And I was like, yeah, cool. I like Chance the Rapper. I'll play the Chance the Rapper room.
Yeah.
It was a one room party. I was the only DJ playing from 10 till 3. And I just don't like that. Like J. Cole sucks. Yeah. Although he has two good songs with Miguel. And so I played those songs a lot. And then I had all his entire back catalog that I may have acquired illegally. And I didn't listen to it in beforehand. I just waited for angry people to come and be like, why haven't you played this song yet? I'm like, I'm going to play it right now for you. But I wish I could have played this instead. So this is Miguel with Sure Thing. Thanks so much, Danielle.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Mitch.
Always fun.
Thanks, Room 40.
The biggest names in tennis are coming to Paris for the most anticipated Roland Garros in years. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. Experience 3 weeks of unparalleled tournament access as the world's top players in tennis face off against each other. Will the veteran champions continue their dominance, or will a fresh face emerge to challenge their legacy on the clay courts? Daily live coverage of this epic showdown begins Monday, May 20th. Don't miss a matchup. Stream it now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.